You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast for the 42nd week of the year from October 14th to October 20th, covering Numbers 28:11 to Numbers 32:6. In Numbers 28:11, God says in the Bible, "On your new moons, you shall bring an elevation offering to God." So this section of the book of Numbers deals with offerings that come at the start of a new month, as well as offerings for the major Jewish holidays. And just as a footnote, the Jewish calendar, which is described in the first five books of the Bible, is a lunar calendar, not a solar calendar. So the month, each month begins with the start of a new moon. So the Jewish calendar is 354 days long, and there's some leap years and things like that. Anyway, but this is a framework for religious observance and personal spiritual practices, and every month on the Hebrew calendar is seen as a chance to start over, to try to be better and have a better life. And in fact, Jewish people say the following prayer at the start of each new month, and it goes like this. It says, "May it be thy will, Lord, our God, and the God of our fathers, that you begin for us this month for good and for blessing. May you give to us long life, a life of peace, a life of goodness, a life of blessing, a life of sustenance, a life of physical health, a life in which there is fear of heaven and fear of sin, a life in which there is no shame or humiliation, a life of wealth and honor, a life in which we love Torah and fear God, a life in which the Lord fulfills the requests of our hearts for good." And my reaction to that is like, wow. We should all want to start every month with these wishes. Imagine if it's like, okay, it's October, let's get started. We want a good month of blessing, health, sustenance, peace. And this can be an idea in recovery, that each month gives us an opportunity to start over again. And God is very generous and merciful, and he grants us a new chance every month to do better. And this fits with the program. We measure sobriety in days, months, years. And so maybe this is something to do. Perhaps as we get time in recovery, we can also ask God to give us a life of goodness, a life of blessing, a life in which there is no shame. That's the wish of every recovering addict, or it should be the wish of every recovering addict. Numbers 32 and 33 says, God spoke to Moses, I'm sorry, let me start over again. Moses spoke to the children of the tribes of the children of Israel, saying, "This is the thing that God has commanded. If a man takes a vow to God, or swears an oath to establish a prohibition upon himself, he shall not desecrate his word. According to whatever comes from his mouth, he shall do." So this verse deals with the issuing of vows. And one thing that's important to understand is that in the biblical context, a vow was a very serious thing. In our era, we've lost track of the power and seriousness of vows made to God. We say things like, "I swear to God," lightly. It's like sort of a way to say, I really mean it, I'm serious, or that we're not lying. And this is not adequate to describe what it really means to swear to God. If you make a vow to God, such as, "God, I swear to you that I will not drink today," you're giving your personal word to the creator of the universe. And from the perspective of the Israelites in the Bible, you were actually, by making a vow, you're creating a brand new biblical law, which you then have to serve. It's no less than building your own new personal an exclusive biblical law to live by. So if you violate it, you're violating biblical law. You're violating the will of God. This is a lot more serious than, you know, promising your roommate you'll take out the trash. If you go back on your word, you've shown disrespect for the higher power. Of course, you should take out the trash too, if you promised, but it's a different kind of desecration of your own spirit if you lie to God. So one solution is to avoid swearing to God if you don't mean it. The other is to treat a holy oath as sacred. Words have power. This is really the meaning of this for us today. It's not an accident that it says, he shall not desecrate his word according to whatever comes from his mouth, he shall do. Whatever comes out of your mouth is binding on you. Whether you believe that or not, it's basically true. If you say something, people are going to interpret it that's what you think or what you mean, and God will interpret it as what you think or what you mean. That's why a lot of, you know, healthy spiritual discipline involves keeping your mouth shut, you know, just thinking before you speak. And if you make a vow, it should be taken seriously, and that will help us in recovery. Numbers 34 and 35 continues on this theme. It says, but if a woman will take a vow to God or establish a prohibition in her father's home in her youth, and her father heard of her vow or the prohibition that she established upon herself, and her father was silent about her, then all her vows shall stand, and any prohibition that she established upon herself shall stand. Now, the other part of this is that the father, if the woman is living at home, her father has the right to nullify her vows. Now, I know this sounds kind of sexist from a modern perspective, but a couple of things to point out about this. In the biblical times, the age that separated a young a girl from a woman was 12. So a girl who was over 12 and a half was considered an adult woman and was able to accept a marriage proposal and so forth. And so when the Bible talks about a father being able to nullify the vow of a woman living in his home, it really means, from a modern perspective, of a young girl. And this verse is really more about parenting than anything else. It's saying that if the father approves of a vow, she is permitted to make serious vows. And if he doesn't approve of it, he has the ability to cancel it. And remember, as we just said, a vow is not like some idle promise. It's really creating a biblical law that you then have to follow. So it's a serious thing, and a child may not understand the implications of that. In recovery, the version of this idea that we come into is when a newcomer wants to make big changes in his or her life. The newcomer is like a child making a vow sometimes. These big changes may be a great idea, and they may not be a great idea. That's why we have sponsors. The sponsor is like the parent in this situation. Because like a vow to God, big life decisions in early recovery should be run past someone with some experience before they're put into action. And I think we've all seen this. You know, when you're newly sober, you make some big statements about what you're going to do with your life, like, I'm never going to drive again. I'm never going to practice law again. I'm never going to work again. I'm never going to talk to my parents again. I'll never take any prescription medication for any reason ever again. And in a lot of cases, these may sound good, but they probably aren't very smart or practical. And so having a sponsor, like the father in the verse, maybe should hear this vow and have the opportunity to comment on it. Numbers 31:1 and 31:2 gets into a different subject. We're back to the story that we were talking about earlier, which is the war against Midian. So in this section of the book of Numbers, we're back to the story of the Israelites on the march, on their way out of the wilderness from Egypt. It's now 40 years later, and they're on their way to conquer the Holy Land, and they have been cursed by Midian, but it isn't going to work. So God says to Moses, saying, "Take vengeance for the children of Israel against Midianites." So Midian is an area that is approximately where Saudi Arabia is today. So it was a nation that stood in the way of the Israelites and tried to block them from conquering the Holy Land. So God commands Moses to organize an army to attack Midian in response to that country's attempt to destroy Israel through immorality and idolatry. So if you remember from earlier, the Midianites sent their princesses and noble women to seduce the Israelites and get them to perform idolatry and sexual immorality to demoralize them and defeat them. And Phinehas, who avenged this action by killing the idolaters, so like Phinehas, now the whole nation has to go into action to defeat a spiritual enemy. And this kind of resonates with what we are doing in recovery, or what maybe we should be doing in recovery. Sometimes you have to declare war on toxic forces. Addiction is our enemy. It is bent on destroying us. And in fact, addiction is a little bit like this enemy that sends its most attractive people in to seduce us and get us to perform self-destructive acts. So sometimes we have to go to battle against it. And it may seem that we're fighting a superior enemy, but we can prevail with God's help. Indeed, in the case of Midian, the commentator's view is that God himself is the one who's been attacked. God thus counterattacks. And addictions that threaten our spiritual health are like foes that attack God himself. Such attacks must be countered if we are to survive. Numbers 31:3-31:4 says, "God spoke to the people, saying, 'Arm men from among yourselves for the legion that may be against Midian, to afflict God's vengeance against Midian, 1,000 from a tribe, 1,000 from a tribe, for all the tribes of Israel shall you send to the legion.'" So this is Moses is telling the Israelites to form an army to go fight this war against Midian. And each tribe, each of the 12 tribes, will send 1,000 men. So you have an army of 12,000 men. Some commentators think the army was actually 13,000 men. And there are actually ways to count the tribes, so the 13 of them, whatever, I don't get into it. But this is what's, if you've ever been involved in military or know anything about history, this is an interesting little story, because here you have 12,000 men who are certainly not trained as soldiers, are going to go fight an entire country. That's right. One group, 12,000 men, which is about the size of a modern army division, one division of untrained soldiers of all ages, between 21 and 50, I think, who've, you know, been slaves and, you know, been living in the wilderness, meditating on Torah for 40 years, they're going to go fight an entire country and its whole army. And the reality was that it was a decisive victory, an extremely decisive victory. So how is this possible? And the answer, I think, and maybe we know this, is that anything is possible when God is on your side. You can vanquish an enemy when you're in the army of God, even an army of one, as they say in the United States. You are an army of one. We surely face moments of doubt about this truth when we enter recovery. You might be feeling like you're fighting a war against a massively superior force. So think about what the Israelites might have been thinking when Moses asked for 12,000 men to go to war against Midian. People might have thought, you know, that's a suicide mission. This is a whole country. We can't possibly win. Yet we can. That's the message of this verse. When the call comes to go to war against our addictions, we need to get into the fight, no matter how bad the odds look, because God is on our side. Numbers 31:21 and 31:22 reads, Eleazar the priest said to the men of the legion who came to the battle, "This is the decree of the Torah which God commanded Moses. Only the gold and the silver, the copper, the iron, the tin, and the lead, everything that comes into the fire, you shall pass through the fire, and it will be purified." So this comment comes after the battle, where this relatively small group, 12,000 men, decisively defeated an entire country and its army. And the legion that attacked Midian was allowed to take spoils from the defeated enemy. This was a common practice during these times. An invading army would take spoils from the enemy, although there's some interesting cases in the Bible where the Israelites were told not to take spoils from certain enemies. But in the case of Midian, they were told they could take gold, silver, iron, copper, and tin. However, before they could be used in the homes of the Israelites, these vessels had to be purified with fire. And there were two reasons for this. One is that if they've been used for cooking, they've been used to cook unkosher food. And they also might have been used in idolatry. So these vessels, these gold and silver and copper, iron, you know, plates and bowls and pots and pans and knives and things like that were tainted, basically. So they had to be purified with fire, and this is actually still done today. It's a process known as koshering, and if you're curious about it, you can see it happens sometimes when a Jewish family moves into a new house. Somebody will come in with a blowtorch and sort of heat up the oven and other surfaces to render them kosher, which is a sort of a modern day continuation of this actual practice. So this is not to digress into technical details, but the reason it's worth mentioning here is to think about it like this. In recovery, the question that comes up is, can you return to various aspects of your former life? Can you use objects or visit places or do activities that you might have previously experienced in a context of getting loaded? Can you somehow purify these things, or can you reuse them? And the answer is yes, and it's no as well. I think this is an important thing to emphasize. There are some things you can never do again. This is a very major concept in recovery. If you're an alcoholic, you can't hang around in a bar. It's not allowed. Or let's just put it this way: it's extremely unwise. Other situations you might be able to revisit in sobriety. You might be able to come back to a place or activity that once triggered you to act out, but you probably, to do that, you have to purify it, so to speak, to pass it through a fire. You know, think about what God's will is for you in the situation. Only then can we resume our earlier activity, but now with the purity of recovery. So Numbers 32:6 reads, "Moses said to the children of God and the children of Reuven, 'Shall your brothers go out to battle while you settle here?'" Just to be clear, it's Gad, G-A-D, not God. It's the children of God. It's pronounced God, but it's spelled like Gad. Gad was one of the 12 tribes of Israel. So what's happening here is that the Israelites have come around the back, sort of the Holy Land. And just to kind of go back over this, it's just so you understand, the Israelites did not go straight into the Holy Land from Egypt. They went south and east, sort of around the back, and then north up through what is now Jordan, and then crossed the Jordan River into the Holy Land from an eastern position. It's a little bit hard to understand, but that's what they did. It would sort of like be going from New York to Boston by way of Chicago. It's just sort of a roundabout trip. But what's happening here is that the Promised Land was supposed to be on the western side of the Jordan River, but the tribes of Gad and Reuven wanted to settle on the eastern side of the Jordan River instead of crossing into Israel. And Moses asks them in response, basically, "How dare you ask to settle here while your fellow Israelites are crossing the river to do battle? to conquer the promised land. So it's a legitimate question, but the tribes of Gad and Reuben quickly clarify that they intend to go into the battle, but they want to come back across the Jordan to this area after they're done fighting. Now, this is a satisfactory answer to Moses, but it underscores an issue that arises in recovery. Moses was afraid that if one tribe appeared afraid to cross the river and go into battle, that other tribes might also grow afraid and not want to go into battle, because fear is contagious. Recovery is all about overcoming fear, crossing personal rivers, so to speak, that block us from our potential promised land. If we show fear, it may infect others, we know. Our fear hurts us, but it also potentially damages the recovery of others. So in recovery, we have to look at ourselves and see if we're acting in fear, and think about whether our fear is potentially affecting the recovery of other people.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast, daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com